God damn it! My life has value!
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Sit up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here is a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
And welcome to another edition of UFTronomy Radio. Today is March 17, 2012. And we're doing a special broadcast today, not a typically scheduled broadcast, which are on Sundays and Tuesdays at 9 p.m. But we are doing it today, Saturday, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And as I can see, not many of you got the message or the memo, and that's okay, because we're going to have the archive of this up for you guys to listen to. Tonight our guest is going to be Sleepy Saul, so we're going to be discussing homeschooling for the dissidents. A little bit of patriot and militia twist to it. We're discussing the ins, the outs, the pros, the cons, the goods, the bads, the uglies, and all that other kind of stuff about it, as well as some improvements that we might look at, some other things we might add to the curriculum for our young young students out there who are going to be probably getting taught a much better education than they will in any school system out there, a public school system anyways. Website, we're going to be getting that one up here very, 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 very shortly. We're almost done with it. Icono's on the last legs of redesigning the whole new site. And we'll be posting up all the old archives and the most recent ones first, though. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at randymack@ufotronomy.com. Whether it's a request for the broadcast, you want to hear somebody specific, or you'd like to have me have somebody specific on, or you'd like to hear about a specific topic. You got any questions for me about committees of safety, militia, the Constitution, whatever it is, feel free to hit me up. If you want to tell me I'm full of shit, well, hey, those are accepted too. Don't get mad, though, if I email you back. let's see, what else is going on? Today's St. Patty's Day, going over to friend's house, and we're gonna have corned beef and cabbage stew. Mmm, good stuff. Looking forward to it. Hopefully several people in our unit are gonna be getting together tonight. We're gonna be having a little grub fest going on. So a little shout out to the Irish out there and all those Irish freedom fighters and individuals out there who demand their freedom and are willing to stand up for it. And willing to do whatever it takes to be free, kudos to you. Hope you get your freedom soon. What else do we have? Upcoming shows. Yes, we got to talk about that. This Sunday, we're going to have a friend of mine on, Keith Broders. Keith is an amazing man, truly an amazing man. We're going to be talking with him. He's a retired school teacher. That's going to be this Sunday, tomorrow. We're going to be talking to Keith Broders. He's a retired school teacher, patriot. Long time. I met him about five years ago now. And Keith has had a change in perception, if you will. He is seeing through the fog. That's an old reference to the old show I used to do, Seeing Through the Fog, where we got to see through the BS of what we actually have today. Even amongst the patriot community. There's a lot of BS in the patriot community as well, so. But Keith is finally seeing through the fog, and we're going to talk to him about his change of perception and his new direction. He's been a long time patron, a very hard working one at that. Probably the hardest working patriot I've ever met in my life. This man had his hands in so much stuff and was making incredible strides, and then one day he just realized it doesn't matter. So we're going to be talking to him about what he's doing, what the change, why the change. And on our founding fathers, they put out a document a while back called the Olive Branch Petition. That was because so many people were on the fence. Or they kept saying, you know, it wasn't time yet, England will come around, yada, yada, whatever. So they put out this little document called the Olive Branch Petition for all those people who were still on the fence. And it was basically a last-ditch effort to try and get these people to realize King don't care what you had to say. He does not care one little bit. You are nothing but a meal ticket to him and his throne and his reign of empire. And they put out this document, and people saw it for what it was, and people finally stood up. We ourselves here at U of Tredemy, we have made such a document. It's called the, It's called the U of Tredemy document. Hence the entire name of this broadcast. This broadcast came about because of that document. You can find a you can find the document at the top right or the top left hand corner of the website under the petition. This is not like any other petition you've ever seen, though. I even got a little audio excerpt for you to listen to about it. Go check it out, fill it out, sign it, send it in. Hard copies only. Walk it in if you can. Flood your congressmen, your senators, your governor, your mayor, whoever you want with this. Flood them all. Would love to see 10,000 of these getting delivered to them on a weekly basis. So all their staff is doing nothing but signing for these as the mailmen come in, or having to accept hand deliveries of these things. And they won't be able to get anything done. And hey, when Congress can't work and Congress can't get anything done, we are free because they're not drafting more laws. We're not drafting more laws and creating more regulations for you and finding out more ways to enslave you, more ways to take what is yours. So keep them bastards busy with something else other than drafting up new laws and signing new bills into law. Keep them busy with other things other than meeting with lobbying groups and special interest groups. Make their lives miserable. Burn up their fax machines, whatever it is, whatever it takes. You know, like Joe Martino says, there is many forms of resistance out there. There are many forms of sabotage. And throwing a monkey wrench in the machine is one of those. You overload the system, and the system will fall down. So this is one of those attempts. This is one of the ways that you can help overload that system. So we're going to be talking to Keith this Sunday. This coming Tuesday, we're going to have Joseph P. Martino, retired colonel and insurgency expert for the U.S. military. This man is a godsend, let me tell you. And besides that, he was actually a listener to the show before he ever became a guest on the show. Go figure that one out. So, hey, maybe I was doing something right all these years. But Joseph P. Martino will be coming on this Tuesday. We're going to be talking about justification for resistance. You know, besides being an insurgency expert for the U.S. military, he still is a professor of just war doctrine. And he has turned that just war doctrine that he teaches with a critical eye towards tyranny. And when do the people have the right to resist? And what it means to have a lawful resistance, or morally correct resistance, if you will. When is resistance morally and lawfully right for the people? We'll be talking about that this Tuesday. Next Sunday, I'm not sure what we're going to do yet. I booked a show, but I moved it up to the first Sunday of next month. We're going to be doing a round table. We're going to have Smiter on. We're going to have Joseph P. Martino on. We're going to have myself there. We're going to have Ohio Frontiersmen on there. We're going to be doing a militia round table. We're going to each one of our members on this panel here, they're going to be coming to the table with a problem or two, or some conundrum that we face. We're going to sit here and hammer it out, find out how we can make it feasible. Now, the interesting thing about this is most of the guests that we're going to be having on are going to be from here in Ohio. So that'll be rather interesting. I mean, we can start tackling, and again, like I said, I've stepped away more from the national front. I'm going to be focusing all my efforts on my county, my town, or my town, my county, and my state, in that order. So we're going to be having those guests on. That'll be an upcoming broadcast. It'll be a militia roundtable. The following Tuesday, we're going to have, not this Tuesday, but the following Tuesday, we're going to have Joe on again for an episode of Goals of the Resistance. We're going to be talking about goal setting. You know, not just we want freedom. Freedom is our goal. No. With goals, you have to be able to measure them. They must have benchmarks of success. What are goals? And you will find after listening to this broadcast that what you thought you had outlined as goals for your organization or anything like that are far from complete, if even goals at all. But these are important. This is what we go out and we tell the people what it is that we're after, what it is that we're about, what it is we hope to achieve. And if our goals are vague and ambiguous like the war on terror, who's the enemy? If our goals are as ambiguous as that, we will get nowhere. So we're talking about goals of the resistance 2 Tuesdays from now. And then that'll lead us into the Sunday broadcast, the beginning of the month, where we will be going through the militia roundtable. So that's it for the shows that are coming up for right now. I've got several more in the works. I just don't have anything scheduled for them yet. Main focus and priority has been getting the website up and a couple of other things done. So that is about it. If you guys have any requests or you guys actually want to broadcast, one of the broadcasts that aren't up yet, let me know. Hit me up, Randy Mac at UF Treadmill, or get with me on Skype, Randy_Mac. Be more than happy to get you any of the broadcasts that you're missing or any ones that you want until they actually start appearing up on the website again. So with that being said, Sleepy, you there?
Yes, I am. It's good to be back on with you, Randy.
Oh, it's good to have you here. How's your day been going?
Not too badly. In fact, the weather here in Austin is actually somewhat sunny and relatively warm, probably in the 50s or so, or 60s or whatever.
That's a good day. We've been having some excellent weather here, except a couple days ago we had a tornado watch or tornado warnings and stuff. Sky was looking pretty nasty and stuff, but other than that, the days here have been actually gorgeous. I'm actually upset because I'm on the air right now instead of being out there. I'd rather be outside. But this is an important subject and an important topic, so, you know, we want to get through. We actually, this is some, you know, this homeschooling thing is, it's been a sore subject for the government and for many people out there. How come, Sleepy?
Because it is one of the more effective methods to actually undermine the system, and I guess in one respect could arguably be a form of monkey wrenching, but at the very least it has gotten so popular and so well received by a lot of different types of people that it is starting to slowly become more and more mainstream, and the system through its various apparatuses of propaganda as well as other types of things have been attempting to demonize homeschoolers. So watching the reaction to the original action is very illuminating in a lot of respects.
Well, you know, our education system was, when Jefferson created the public school system, it was to create an educated and informed populace. Because Jefferson knew that the only way man could be free and remain free was to be educated and to understand what that freedom was, what it meant, and his responsibilities towards that freedom. Now today we find that, you know, the U.S. ranks, 52nd in the world? I mean, we're just barely above third world countries in our education level. Which is really interesting because when you look at it, we are not a very smart society anymore. I mean, the Chinese students that are coming out of China, definitely a third world country, communist. These students are incredible. They know a hell of a lot more than Americans know. Yet, we pride ourselves on being free. And yet, I think it's funny because Russian TV constantly compares the freedom that Russians have now with the Americans. And when you look at the comparison between the two and how free Russians are versus Americans, well, Russia has become the free country, whereas America has taken the old, well, we basically replaced the Russians out there as far as freedom goes. We are not free here. Yet all these people around the country actually believe that we are still free, that we live in a democracy.
Well, let's just start there. I mean, you know, anybody who's read The Founders or even something called a book, you know, guys, what that is. It's a collection of lots of pieces of paper with ink on them that has a cover, you know, a book, like one you can touch. In these things, these old archaic things called books, there's actual archived history of essentially where, I mean, geez, how do you put it? I mean, it's so much stuff going on. Where essentially there has been a combination of dumbing down as well as deliberate attempts to flush very important pieces of data down the memory hole. So when I've told people, look, go archive stuff off of the internet before it gets taken down, or go burn like this set of internet broadcasts onto a CD and get it off the internet just in case they're deleted or whatever the case is. Yeah, I mean, same thing here. And so you can look throughout history where there's been various instances of book burning where you have people of any political orientation or something else. And just because they don't like something, they then say, oh, we're just going to burn it, and somehow that mystically will get rid of it. And it's like, well, what if there's copies? Well, we'll find all the copies and get rid of all the data. Now, obviously, you can take this and apply it to other forms of, to other storage mediums like CDs or various other things. But the book, if you want to think of it this way, the book is not just the physical thing called the book. It is also, in a lot of ways, a symbol of knowledge, of history, of where we've been, as well as kind of indicating in some ways where we're going. In a lot of ways, kind of like in that documentary, Reclaiming the Blade, where the sword is not just like a tool, but also a lot of times a symbol of bravery, of courage, of honor, that kind of truth and justice, so to speak. Well, the book is in a lot of ways the symbol of knowledge, of wisdom, and various other values related to that. So when I've been noticing this too, not just with the mainline public, but also with a lot of political dissidents, unfortunately, where they will absolutely refuse to read, or they're reluctant to, as the case may be. And it's very sad, because a lot of them have gone through the public fool system. The public fool system basically wants to get you to be so inured on them, to be so hopelessly dependent on them, that you won't want, and also kind of to also bore you to death and also confuse the hell out of everyone, so much so that when you, on your own time, or, you know, after you quote-unquote graduated, whatever that means, then you won't want to read things on your own. You won't want to actually sit down with people who are 20, 30 years your senior and learn from and interview them, basically, and find out about their wisdom and experience and whatever. So it's pretty much stamping. That is kind of the whole point of the public fool system. It is specifically designed to kill the creativity out of the next generation and of various other things as well, but like curiosity and, you know, seeking purpose and that kind of thing. But it's to basically give you some sort of hollowed out plastic imitation of life, and then supposedly you're supposed to swallow it and accept it. So, yeah, unfortunately, yeah, the founders did mention about there should be a certain level of public schooling, but that's not the same thing that we're dealing with. Now, it kind of reminds me of Ben Franklin, for those of you guys who are, you know, patriot types and whatever. For example, Benjamin Franklin was the only person who helped prepare and who signed all four of the critical documents that marked the beginning of America. Obviously, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, but also the Treaty of the Alliance with France and the peace agreement with England, which happened between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. So Franklin, you think like, wow, he was there for all four. He must have been so highly educated. He must have gone to college. He must have. No. Franklin was homeschooled.
As were a lot of people.
As well, they didn't exactly call it back then, but I mean, what? At most, he had something on the order of only 2 years of quote unquote formal schooling, and then after that, he went and became an apprentice, and that's how he actually like learned to trade and made a living, and not just made a living, he made a nice living. Was he first started, again, that's what built the country, was the apprenticeship system. Not going to college, all right, was the apprenticeship system. That is what gave the true entrepreneurial spirit to the American workforce and started building the infrastructure so that later, yeah, then the colleges would come. See, that's something else a lot of folks don't understand, even if they're well-meaning, Randy, is that colleges do not build civilizations at all. You have to have the guys who can actually, like, think and who are willing to do that, build the infrastructure, that build the sewers, the roads, the houses, the food distribution, all the agriculture-related stuff, the machine, the factories, the machines, all of those things you need to make a civilization. And then at the end of it come the colleges. So there's this fallacious notion that, oh, you need to go to college to – no. Civilization comes first, then the colleges, not the other way around. But apparently that little history lesson is actually lost upon folks who unfortunately were badly propagandized, and I mean that in a negative sense, ever since they were, said in front of the television are rotten out of crap-filled diapers. But look at Ben Franklin's background. He even said in his autobiography, quote, "From a child, I was fond of reading, and all the little money that came into my hands was ever laid out in books. Often I sat up in my room reading the greatest part of the night." Okay, well, here's an interesting thing. So for all you political dissident guys who want to go get your liberty and, defeat the globalists and, whatever the case is, how many of you are spending the greatest part of the night reading books? Just an honest question. I mean, how many of you are trying to, in a very autodidactic manner, for those of you that don't know, an autodidactic is someone who is self-taught, as many of the founders were. How many of you are autodidactic? I mean, if you want to achieve liberation, maybe where you should start is not at the gun range, but in the library. And again, don't interpret that as and we're going to get to this. Marksmanship is important, but the point is about priorities. Where do you start first? What's most? I would say go to the library first. Find out why a lot of this stuff is happening. But yes, reading books is kind of really key. And also consider, what did previous civilizations teach their children? Well, one type of thing that was kind of taught was something that was known as the and if I mispronounce it, please forgive me, but I believe it's called the trivium. And the trivium is like the three things. And depending on which version you're talking about, generally speaking, would be some combination of logic, grammar, and then a lot of times either math or rhetoric. So, think about that this way. I mean, for you, those of you guys listening, when was the last time you were told about just like what a three-premise syllogism is? Or do you even know what I just said when I said three-premise syllogism? Anybody know what I'm talking about? Or how about different rhetorical devices? Many of you hopefully have heard about the slippery slope, or maybe you've heard of, let's take a basic thing. What's the difference between cogent and fallacious reasoning? Cogent reasoning versus fallacious reasoning. Do any of you know what I just said? Or how about just basic grammar? I can't tell you how many times, Randy, I've seen good, well-intentioned people who are trying to resist the establishment, but when they go to various discussions or forum boards or whatever, and they try and type something, a lot of times their grammar is pretty horrible. I mean, besides issues of capitalization and punctuation, there's also problems with just basic verb-subject agreement, basically the syntax.
Right.
But I say all of that. Do any of you guys know what the hell I'm talking about when I say syntax? And that is what I'm getting at. These are basic things. And again, do not interpret what I just said as, oh, I'm holier. No. All of us need to learn all these basic things. All of you guys need to know how to tell the difference between cogent and fallacious arguments. All of us need to use good syntax. And all of us need to understand how to put a decent syllogism together, and various other basic skills. I mean, Randy, how many times have you heard other people say how great of an analyst I am with whatever the subject is? How many times have you heard that?
I can't even begin to count, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, there's a reason. And again, this isn't about my own self-aggrandizement or ego, because it's not about that. It's about how was I able to pull it off? It was because I had a good education. Well, how did I get a good education? What, did I go to a private school? Well, you know what, to be perfectly honest, except for the first, up until second grade, basically, until the school closed out, it was actually a cheap private school, actually. But they got bought out by a bunch of duplicitous bastards. everyone was ticked off when the private school was closed. But for most of my education, I was homeschooled. Okay, so it was done right. So if you want to know how to resist the bad guys, need to start, you know, putting together plans and petitions and, you know, forming committees of safety or whatever, let's start from ground zero. What do you know? What were you taught in school? And let's just start from there and see if we can build civilization from the ground up again.
You know, let's talk about this, you know, the aspects of our education system, what it was and what it used to be. For instance, you know, I'd like to give a little bit of reference here, you know, just so we can actually get a little bit of context into what we're saying here about how we've been dumbed down, if you will. You know, how we've become less educated than even our forebears. Let's take it to the very beginning of the century, the very beginning of the 1900s. You know, the very beginning of the 1900s, the average individual in America had a vocabulary of around a little over 3,500 to 4,000 words. Let me repeat that again. The average American back then during the Industrial Revolution we weren't really taught a whole bunch. We weren't really taught a lot in our public school systems. Had a vocabulary of around 3,500 to 4,000 words. Today, the average individual graduating from college with a bachelor's degree has a vocabulary just under 400 words. Now, people have often said that the level of intelligence can be determined by one's vocabulary. How well can you express thought? How well can you put together ideas? You can express much clearer, much more concise ideas with a 4,000-word vocabulary than you can with a 400-word vocabulary. Now, we have to remember, the average man back in the early 1900s did not go to college. That was the realm of the upper class, of the aristocrats, and so forth and so on. Today, we have a whole bunch of people going to college. We have a very large percentage of our people, of our students going on to college. And the vocabulary is one-tenth of what it used to be. So if we can't even put together these clear, concise thoughts, how can we understand complex thoughts, complex ideas, if we can't even relate them, if we can't even engage in discussions about them ourselves? How do we begin to understand them? And freedom, it's a very simple subject. What is freedom? But then when you start trying to discuss what it truly means, what is freedom, how much freedom, the context of freedom, how to go about achieving freedom, you start getting into much more complex subjects. So how did this come to be about? You know, how is it, Sleepy, that we went from having a 4,000-word vocabulary on average to less than 400 for the average individual who graduates college with a bachelor's degree?
Well, actually, that would be a subject for its own broadcast, Randy, just because there are many things on that kind of news and analysis angle where it kind of can get really hairy. But what I will say briefly here is that there have been other folks who have written books on this. I believe there was I don't remember the author's name right offhand, but she wrote a book called The Dumbing Down of America. And there have been various other similar books like that really go through the kind of nitty-gritty of how the public educational systems, I guess you could say, of this country have basically been seized by despotic interests and have essentially have used a lot of Marxist-like indoctrination-type methods to essentially eradicate any semblance of, you know, genuine free intellectual thought, which is kind of a problem, obviously. I mean, you can look at all sorts of other fictional books and kind of seeing this happen in various ways and means. For example, you know, if you were to look at there's actually three fictional books I would actually like to recommend everyone read. And I would like to kind of point something out fairly briefly about each one of them. Obviously, there is George Orwell's 1984. There is Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. And there is Julian Huxley's Brave New World. Now, in each one, pay attention to how the children were treated. Basically, in the 1984 situation, children are what? They are raised to serve the state. I mean, that's kind of like the whole point is to serve the state. It's not to go and be have a happy life. It's not to be with their family. It's not increase quality and standard of living for whatever their own self-interests are. It's to serve the state.
Very true.
In Fahrenheit 451. Actually, that book's probably the most important of the three for this particular discussion because that dealt all about the drop in education. And so I'll return to that one in just a moment. Brave New World, the children were basically – kind of like how Morpheus described in the first Matrix movie, humans are no longer born, they are grown. Well, that happened in Brave New World, where the children are literally grown again. It's to serve the state in a lot of ways, like 1984. So Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. So you're not allowed to read books. They're evil. If you're caught with a book, you're basically punished. And what you are allowed to do is engage in a lot of mindless fluff. And it was interesting, especially that one scene between Guy Montag and the antagonist who was his boss at the fire station. And yeah, and of course, keep in mind, too, for those of you that haven't read the book, firemen in this book start fires. They don't stop them.
No, they do not.
Right. So there was that one scene, though, where Montag was sitting in his bed and the boss comes in and they kind of talk for a bit. Basically, that scene was important because the antagonist basically describes how everything was eventually dumbed down. It was dumbed down to the point where people wanted to read synopses of bigger, thicker works. It was the idea of where everything is condensed so much so that a lot of meaning is lost. In very much the same way in 1984 when the newest edition of the Newspeak dictionary is thinner than the one before, and so that each edition of the dictionary gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Same thing, something similar in Fahrenheit 451, where you have a lot of pieces of literature being replaced by, instead of having words on the page, a lot of pictures. But not just pictures like here and there, like lots of pictures. And the pictures are very big and they take up a lot of space in the page to the point where the word count goes down. And glossy magazines and, you know, comic book stuff, but not just like comic books like how we understand it today, but like more so. And so that's kind of where everything went. And eventually it got to the point where no one read anything anymore, or very rarely. And you see, that's kind of funny because in a lot of ways that's already happened, or shall we say is happening right now. I mean, if you don't believe me, all you have to do is go to any internet discussion forum, go to Facebook, look at various postings. Actually, one of my favorite places to go is go to a YouTube video comment on anything and just look at the syntax, look at the grammar. Don't pay attention to the content. Just look how it's typed. Look how there's no punctuation or capitalization a lot of the time. That is like a big deal. And I don't want to hear – or go to a chat room. That's another great place to go. Yeah, seriously. I mean, look, it's one thing if you're trying to type something quickly, you hit enter, and then you may be messed up on a thing or two. That's one thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying when people deliberately do that. I mean, Randy, I have literally come across folks who claim to be constitutionalists or whatever, but – several of them have actually mentioned about how, oh, you know, I'm a fucking American. I don't need to learn how to use grammar. And it's just like, Okay, apparently you don't understand anything about the founders or how the country got started, so I guess, you know, when you say you're a constitutionalist, I guess that's, like, what, the new trendy thing now?
That's what I've always said. You know, there are big P patriots out there, and there are little P patriots out there. The big P patriots are people that actually do understand. They strive to emulate what our founding fathers did, what they believed, how they acted, and what they were willing to do in order to achieve, and not only achieve, but keep and maintain their freedom. Then you have the little P patriots who have gotten into this because it's sexy, it's cool, it's vogue, it's chic, it's the in thing to do. Their friends are part of it, so hey, I'll be cool too. But they'll be the first ones who ask for permission from the government to engage in their freedoms. They'll be the first ones who say we can't do that because it's illegal. They'll be the first ones who will give up their freedoms because the government has drafted new laws. And they'll be the first ones who will give up their guns when the government says it's no longer lawful for you to own your guns.
Well, yeah, and then we get into all those kind of problems. The point being, though, is that the quality of your education that you got when you were a little kid actually does have a constant domino effect as you get older. Now, there's always ways to remedy it as best as you can later, but also keep in mind, for example, that when actually probably the best time to learn a foreign language is when you are about, what, anywhere between 7 and 12 years old, approximately?
Well, it depends on what school of thought you look at. Many people have said the best time to start learning a foreign language is while you're learning English. You know, 6, 7, 8 months, a year old.
Right, and we can observe that with a lot of immigrant families, legal or illegal. A lot of immigrant families of both types, very much, it is more that kind of 6 months, pretty much straight from the cradle for the most part. But that's kind of my point, though, is that then those children grow up to be bilingual or multilingual, as the case is, and then they're better off than their parents were, assuming it's a first and second generation type deal. Same thing here. It's very much, it's kind of like the old adage about the tree. You know, if the tree grows up straight and crooked, it'll always be crooked, or most of the time it'll be crooked. Or if it goes straight, it'll be straight. It's the idea where you have a firm foundation. So let's use an architectural analogy. If the foundation for a building is crap, then don't be surprised when you build it, you know, above 20 stories, that it's going to have structural issues and then collapse or whatever the case is. If you had a good foundation, though, then it should stay up pretty much, you know, maybe not forever, but at least for a very, very, very long time, and do it in such a way where it's, like, good quality, provides shelter, looks nice, that kind of thing. And same thing here. And here's what's interesting, Randy. This can be turned around at any time. So, you know, maybe for a lot of you guys, maybe instead of spending so much of your time, you know, in a random patriot discussion forum thing, maybe take half of that time and go homeschool your children. We're going to get into how to do that a little bit. But then go homeschool your children. That is actually much more important. Because at some point, and look, here's the thing. At some point, all of us are going to die. It's just a fact. We're mortal beings. We are going to die at some point. There's the old survivalist joke about, you know, it's the one disease emergency they've never been able to successfully solve is death. The reason I bring that up is when you're dead, who's left? Well, if you're on the older side or whatever, it should be the next generation, your children, other people's children, that kind of thing. So when you want to talk more about long-term strategy in order to secure our liberties, it would be kind of important to play, you know, both short-term and long-term basis, but especially long-term, to really focus on the children. Notice, too, that the enemy has done and I'll give credit where credit is due. The enemy has done an extremely good job with doing as much as they have. A lot of it had to do with the fact that they were able to snatch the minds of the young, provably. And they also had the patience to do it. See, that's the other problem, Randy, is we see a lot of these guys who are well-meaning and saying, we want our freedom now. We want things now. We want revolution now. Now, now, now. Well, maybe so, maybe no, but maybe a little bit more patience is in order. So maybe, you know, what you should be doing is put down the cardboard protest sign and pick up a book and go grab your kid and, you know, read to them. That's a good starting point, is actually reading to your child a book that, you know, obviously age appropriate and whatever, but, you know, like, you know, back in 1776, there were a bunch of guys who basically shot back at bad men in red coats. Who, you see where I'm saying, though?
Right.
See, that's a place to start. That is real work. Also, notice, too, the Irish. You know, technically, the Irish are in a better position in the early 20th century than we are right now. They actually were fairly cohesive in a lot of ways. They actually had family. They actually had their own schooling type stuff, in a manner of speaking, homeschooling and otherwise.
They still have their own culture.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that too. But again, if we're going to start from absolute rock bottom, which is my presumption here, you have to teach the children, and you can't do that if you're simultaneously trying to run this completely unfair race where they're in a government indoctrination center, the public school system, your local one, you know, for 8 hours a day or however long the school day is now. And then you have to compete with that when you only see them for, you know, half an hour, 2 hours a day, whatever the typical time frame is, after you get home from work, which is, of course, some low-paying thing where you're underemployed. You can hardly, you know, keep the roof over your head. You see, it's completely unfair from the beginning. So maybe if you could maybe have a game changer and actually get your kids out of the schools and or public schools and then seeing what else you can do, then maybe we'll have a chance. But until that happens, I'm not very optimistic, because I understand just how important it is. And I'm looking right now at all the well-meaning people who want to do something good, and I'm looking at the quality, and I'm sorry, I'm just not that impressed. I'm sorry, I'm just not. Now, we can still fix this, but it's going to take some serious work. And if people aren't willing to work, then whatever. If they are willing to work, we might be able to make something happen. We got to start from rock bottom. And so, you know, guys, you know, put down the corporate protest sign, put down the, you know, your fake plastic, you know, drill rifle or whatever, and pick up a book, pick up a pen and paper, and start using some correct syntax. And then eventually we can get to the bigger stuff. Again, it's kind of like the old adage I like to use. If you can't lift 20 pounds, if a man cannot lift 20 pounds, you know for certain he cannot lift 150 pounds. You know that for certain. It is a cogent. That's cogent reasoning there for you. What we really need in terms of long-term strategy are guys who can handle 300 pounds with no problem. But even 150 pounds would be a big step in the right direction. But the problem we're running into here, Randy, is a lot of guys can't even lift 20. And so I'm saying, okay, let's start lifting 5-pound weights. And lifting 5-pound weights, translated literally, is learning how to use some syntax. Let's learn some cogent reasoning. And while we're at it, when we're doing PE, the Patriot style homeschooling, I guess you could say, while we're doing PE, let's learn how to do push-ups correctly. Let's learn to do some pull-ups, so we can also kind of have a blending of a lot of things. So who knows? I mean, PE class could be something as simple as, you know, just kind of like an Appleseed type thing. I mean, that would be a homeschooling event in of itself. I mean, a lot of times some homeschooling parents will take the day off from their, if they're the type that have something resembling a regular curriculum, and they'll go out and like go to the zoo or something. Well, maybe going to Appleseed would be a substitute for the zoo. The point is, guys, you have lots and lots of options, but you need to get away from the sexy stuff. That would be like first and foremost. Stop, you know, engaging in this ridiculous video game mentality that I've been seeing for years, and let's get down to real work. And guess what? A lot of it is not sexy. Okay, I'll be the very first one to say that if I am. A lot of it isn't, but it's incredibly important. Oh my gosh, teaching your child to read aloud, who knows? Maybe if your kid's smart enough, given enough time, maybe he'll like be in such a position where he will be articulate enough to get up in front of a lot of people and give a speech at a rally. And then because of all that good community building type stuff at that rally, then maybe other things can build on top of that. See, all of this is incrementally developed. So again, if the foundation is bad, you can't have your wonderful skyscraper, your republic, or whatever it is you want to manifest. That's kind of my whole point. So we can definitely get into how to build that foundation for the rest of the broadcast if you want to go in that, if you would like to do that. But I just kind of want to say from the beginning, there is very much a reason we're getting into this. This is so important. I can't even articulate how important this is. A lot of stuff is riding on this.
Well, you know, the reason I wanted to do this show on, in the first place was I just had on a guest called, his name was Bill Thacker, and we had done a broadcast last Sunday, I believe it was, on the Gulen schools, publicly funded charter schools that have a very specific agenda, indoctrination of our youth towards all things Turkey, you know, which just goes in line with what Julian Huxley wrote. Julian Huxley, by the way, was the founder of UNESCO, and those of you who aren't aware of who or what UNESCO is, UNESCO is the UNESCO was a think tank that was created by the League of Nations, or I'm sorry, not the League of Nations, the UN, back around 44, 45, I want to say it was. And UNESCO stands for United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. Now, we all know what the UN is, or we should know what the UN is and what their charter says and what it means and their agenda. UNESCO was brought about for one specific purpose, to standardize the education of the world. Now, why would this be important? Why would they care if everybody was being taught the same thing? Well, again, it all goes back to being a good global citizen. You must know all things state and only learn what the state dictates. Now, this UNESCO mandate, written by Julian Huxley back in, and actually you can read Julian Huxley's writings on it. His writings came out in 1946. He openly stated and declared what the purpose of this was. Our students, especially in America, could no longer be taught according to that school curriculum, which was founding fathers, reading, writing, arithmetic. They had to be taught more things. They had to be taught more along an indoctrinational line. But not only that, but the way they were taught. We used to have a very classic liberal education system in America. Now, liberal does not mean what you think it is. Again, go back to your definition in your dictionary. Go back to the Oxford Dictionary. Our educational system was geared towards critical thought. It was heavy in algebra, Latin. Both of those have been proven to promote critical thought. Julian Huxley decided that that could no longer be because we could not raise critical thinkers. People just must be told what to learn, accept it as fact, and never question. From there, you can also go into Lord Bertrand Russell's writings on impact of science on society, which is a very dry read. But there he is very open about what the purpose of education is throughout the world now. In fact, he said we must get the children as young as we possibly can, as early as 5. Keep them in school for the majority of the day so that their parents will have very little interaction with them, so their teachers will become that main educator. And whatever that teacher tells them will be fact. But not only that, but to raise them so that they will never act in a way that would bring scorn upon them from that educator. In other words, do not act outside of what that educator tells you is appropriate behavior. Do not think outside of what that educator has told you is appropriate behavior. You know, we truly have to understand this, and ever since UNESCO came about, our school system has gone from the local level, your town, your city, determining what was taught there, teachers being able to teach according to their curriculum, to now a federally mandated curriculum, going so far as to say we're going to get rid of Jefferson out of our textbooks, going so far as to say we're going to start teaching history starting after the Civil War. So our entire history, our founding, why we came to be about as a country, will be erased from our children's textbooks. Some schools have already done this in certain states. Texas is moving on it. South Carolina, North Carolina have moved on these. There is an agenda here in the public school system, and it has been an agenda that has been being worked on for over 50 years now. You know, I think that you really have to understand the why this is happening in order to understand the what that is happening. You can understand what, but if you don't understand the why and the who of what is doing it, you're not going to grasp the reality of the situation and the severity of the situation either. So, yeah, let's start moving off into those areas that you had just mentioned, Sleepy. I just want to give a little background, a little history, because I think it's important that we understand the who, the what, the where, the when, the why, and the how.
Oh, of course, and I'm glad that you emphasized those aspects. So, going from more of that kind of news and analysis side to more problem solving, let's get into more how homeschooling works and kind of different schools of thought, at least a little bit. I would just like to start off with a comment that I've noticed, like, every type of political dissident you can imagine, the constitutionalist, the anarchist, the environmentalist, the monarchist, and yes, they do exist, almost basically everybody and their uncle who's a dissident that doesn't like the establishment, at some point they always talk about, well, we just need to educate the masses and then everything will be fine. So it's always about education. That's what they've all said. Well, here's the problem. Most of them suck at teaching. And I don't mean just suck, like they suck ass. Like literally, I don't intend to be mean here, but most political dissidents suck at teaching. That's kind of the big problem when one of the main things that they all, or probably the most important thing they always address is, oh, we need to just educate the masses and have a mass awakening or whatever and everything will be fine.
Educate them what? How educate them in what? You know, we don't answer these questions ourselves. We make these general broad statements, but again, there goes, you know, that leads to our lack of understanding. Educate them in what? Educate them how?
Right, exactly. So let's get into a little bit of that. So I mentioned a little bit earlier about the trivium. Yeah, so let's just take one version of it, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Let's start with logic. Logic is essentially the study of how things are constructed, in a manner of speaking. So it's more based on structure, not about content. Because when you get into content, that's rhetoric. That's different. And there are some very good books and resources actually, and even an introductory primer to logic would be a broadcast in of itself. What I will say here, though, is a lot of the con artist trickery that the establishment uses is based on illogical premises. So a lot of the time you can prove that the bad guys are being blatantly illogical if you knew how logic worked in the first place. So, for example, if you knew not just the fact that the following brief syllogism I'll give is logically valid and you know, sound and whatever, because those are very specific terms I'm using now. You know, it's valid, it's sound, and there's a degree of accuracy to it in terms of truth. But why it is, and here's the syllogism. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. Let me say that one more time, just everybody can catch up. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, all men are mortal. Now, if you can get yourself some good books on which is known as traditional logic or syllogistic logic, which is based on syllogisms, then the good books will teach you about why that particular syllogism, three-premise syllogism, where technically it's two premises and a conclusion, because the conclusion starts with the word therefore, and whatever. It'll tell you why it's valid and sound, and then there are various exercises you can do, and at least the books that will really teach you the correct way and how to do that. I'll give you some resources toward the end of the broadcast as various places you can start looking. But that's like a brief example of logic. Let's move on to rhetoric. Now, rhetoric is, again, now logic is focused on structure. Rhetoric is more focused on content. So, again, if I were to, let's say, focus on, actually, an easy way to kind of understand just the basics of rhetoric is understanding basic fallacies. So we'll take, like, ad hominem. So, for example, if I say, like, you know, class, what is an ad hominem argument? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? You know, that's a brief example. It's base ad hominem is essentially where you attack your opponent personally instead of actually responding to the opponent's evidence and overall argument. So literally the term ad hominem literally means is an argument to the person instead of their argument and facts.
We could also call that the school of Saul Alinsky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also, as a side note, guys, I mean, a lot of you guys know that I am one of the relatively few people that have made a big deal about internal balkanization. Hell, I should know. I coined the term. But vernacularly, it's infighting. A lot of you know what that is. And what I've noticed in a lot of cases, I know this is kind of an aside, I'll just say this briefly. I notice a lot of infighting, there's a lot of ad hominem, where a lot of certain discussions then turn into infighting eventually later because there was incessant ad hominem stuff. So if somebody was talking about, like, fluoridation of water supplies, and then someone else had an issue with, like, one minor detail or something, then it eventually, you follow, like, a discussion thread or whatever the case is, and it eventually devolves into, like, your mother's a whore or something. It's like, what does that have to do with the thing we were originally talking about? But you see a lot of things that kind of develop into that. So just be aware of those ad hominems. So if you want to solve infighting, maybe people shouldn't be using ad hominems and fallacies in general.
Well, when you can't win the debate, you attack the debater.
Right, right. That's what ad hominem is. Let's look at another type of fallacy, something that's called a non sequitur. Now, non sequitur is a type of fallacy that translated literally means it does not follow. For example, if I say... hold on, I have to come up with an example on the fly, so let me see how well I can do this. If I am walking across the street and I step in some grass, what that means is that Amy's bicycle doesn't have enough air, like, or she doesn't have enough air in the in her front bicycle or tire. You see what I mean? It's like, what is me walking across the road and stepping in grass have anything to do with Amy's lack of air pressure in her bicycle tire? It doesn't. That's the point. That's an example of a non sequitur. It does not follow that me walking grass has anything to do with her bicycle in the first place, or at all. But you see, a lot of the times with various con artist trickery types that the establishment likes to use, and unfortunately some other people will use as well just because they don't know how to think. And notice that how to think, not what to think. Because if somebody teaches you what to think, they're a propagandist. If they teach you how to think, they're a teacher. Then, you know, that's something to very much keep in mind is the non sequitur. Yeah, I mean, and there's various other fallacies, too. There's appeal to authority. You know, there's the straw man. And by straw man, I'm not talking about the kind of quasi-legal thing about your legal person, that's something different. In this context, I'm talking about like a straw man argument. There is begging the question. There's all those types of things. So when you study rhetoric, you will learn a lot about how a lot of con artist trickery works, because a lot of con artist trickery that the establishment likes to use is based on using a lot of fallacious reasoning. A lot of it. So if you learn how to do that, you can, for example, remember there was that swine flu scare a little while back?
Yes, sir.
And supposedly they were saying about, oh, well, if it gets worse, ironically, they did a lot themselves, so that's a discussion for another time, too. Regardless of that, a lot of them were saying about, oh, if it gets worse, we're going to have to put together martial law, and that's what we're going to need to do to keep people safe or whatever. Here's the problem, guys. A lot of the reasoning for that is very fallacious for a lot of reasons. It's not even cogent. It's not even a little bit cogent. It's like absurdly and irresponsibly just fallacious. And if you also look at the logic of it, a lot, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it is also illogical as well. So that's the important thing about having an education, a real education that focuses on basic things like logic and rhetoric, will give you the tools you need to know in order to decipher and otherwise figure out where how the con artist trickery works. And also, kind of like as a side benefit, which is kind of really important, you can maybe, if you're trying to go around recruiting people for your organization, if you, as you're vetting someone, especially if they're on the newer side and really don't understand a lot of this finer, these finer concepts, then maybe if you can explain to them why such a thing the establishment is doing in this one regard is fallacious or illogical or whatever, then maybe you've just gained another guy on your fire team. See, oh my gosh, I actually thought of a solution. I can't do that. Sorry, side joke. But anyway, yeah, that's like one thing right there. And another aspect of the Trufium too is grammar. And yeah, I mean, you know, guys, just go get a basic English grammar book. You don't even need to get a thick one. Just get something basic that will teach you about, you know, make sure you have like good subject-verb agreement. Make sure you know the difference between a noun, an adjective, an adverb.
You know, the importance
and all those kind of things. Yeah,
the importance of this also. How do we teach our children that which we ourselves do not know?
Oh boy, don't get me started on that one.
I mean, it basically comes down to that. You know, I a perfect point of, you know, you keep bringing up this Patriot community and stuff, and again, let us look at ourselves. Let us put a critical eye upon ourselves. How much false propaganda and rhetoric have you heard out there coming out of the Patriot, out of any Patriot out there, on any subject, whether it's the Constitution or whatever, and the vast majority of what they're saying is false. Or the ideas that they promote and then the references they use to back it up are in contradiction with each other. You know, especially like, you know, with Tea Party is discussing, you know, arguing for smaller government and then referencing the Federalist Papers to promote small government. That itself is an oxymoron. And we talked about this early before the show. You know, or we can look at, let's take a very famous Harvard Law professor who has never had a job and lived at Harvard Law his entire life, where he says that the Constitution states that the state that no state has the right to secede. And yet, in the same, he'll also state that each of the states has the right to coin and print their own and regulate their own money. And this is a guy that we hold up to be a paramour of truth and justice within the Patriot community. Both of those statements are false. Yet we teach these things as fact to our children when we ourselves have never gone and verified. Because reading is too difficult. It takes too much time. And, well, you know, a lot of this stuff is just pretty damn boring. But how do we teach our children that which we ourselves do not know or understand?
Well, Randy, in a lot of ways, when I mentioned a little bit earlier about being autodidactic, that's kind of the, how shall we say, kind of backup or reserve kind of orientation where you literally just have to teach yourself. At least with some stuff, maybe not everything, but at least some things, that if you literally don't know something, you're going to have to become autodidactic so that as a homeschooling parent, you can then teach it to your kid. I mean, that has happened so many times, even with people I personally knew. That, I can't count all the time stuff like that's happened, but suffice it to say, those parents are much more courageous than your run-of-the-mill American patriot is, because the American patriot will take the cardboard protest sign and go yell for a bit, but or whatever the case is, but they won't sit down and read with their kids. And for those that do, hey, that is exactly what you need to be doing, among other things, besides your preps and all the other good stuff. But there are some things that probably don't work that are a waste of time, and that's another key thing too. Time is a key aspect of control. The time that you would spend watching their predictive programming nonsense or in some ways worse, running around doing things that you know don't work, that even people who can like think at least halfway straight like myself and others have told you doesn't work, and you know who you are because we've had private conversations about this. So, you know, we told you about some things don't work. How about let's do some other things? Oh, my gosh, problem solving. Oh, my gosh, actually, like, separating the wheat from the chaff and holding on to the wheat and getting rid of the chaff. Oh, no, can't do that. We have to run around with with what doesn't work because it's sexy. No. There will be a time and a place for the quote-unquote sexy stuff. Don't. You just need to be patient. In the meantime, building infrastructure is not sexy, at least not most of it anyway. Okay, setting up your committee of safety and or whatever other projects you're doing, your local alternative currency and all the other stuff I usually talk about. A lot of it is very diplomatically based. A lot of it has to deal with articulating what you want to do in the first place. A lot of it has to deal with a lot of, I guess you could say intellectual, but it's not just that. It's also a lot of interpersonal, like social skills and all that. And here's the funny thing with homeschoolers. You'll hear this common lie about homeschoolers don't, you know, what about their socialization? They're not spending most of their day with other people in their categorical age group. It's so horrible. No. A proper upbringing would entail that children learn how to deal with adults, with other people of various ages and backgrounds, of not just adults of various backgrounds, but also teenagers and, you know, younger children and older children. I mean, literally about as, for lack of a better term, about as diverse as you can think of. You see, that's the funny thing, Randy. All the stuff in the public school system, when they talk about diversity, 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 is about as homogenous as you can get. I mean, think about it. They thrust a bunch of, like, what, 30, 50 kids in, like, one class or whatever the ratios are nowadays. And if, like, all these kids who, if they're not necessarily of, like, the same background, at the very least they're all the same age or very, very close to it. Now, that's getting pretty homogenous. I don't know where the diversity is there. But homeschoolers, on the other hand, usually they have, you know, for the most part, there is automatically a greater probability they'll be dealing with lots of different people. I mean, I've noticed certain parents, like a quick example, I've noticed some parents, like for math class, will do a field trip type thing. Field trip for math class? Did he just say that? Yes, I did. And listen up, because this is important, because this shows a lot of where the creativity can come in. I remember there was one parent who did a kind of field trip thing for math class, and what they did was they went to the grocery store, and they looked at prices, and not just prices, but also unit prices, and comparing the value, and also, it was basically big economics lessons, what it turned out to be. And then they would, you know, and then they also managed to talk to, like, the local manager of the grocery store and whatever, and, oh my gosh, but if the child needs their proper socialization to happen in the public schools where they never would have had a chance to talk to an actual businessman or whatever the case is. See, so there's all those lies as well that you'll never come in contact with other people. You'll somehow be, you know, in a back room or whatever. And you see, that's the big lie too, Randy. All the guys that I've known and other people I know too, so it is secondhand, that are the most reclusive usually tend to be guys that have gone through the public school system. They're the ones that most of the time are usually about as reclusive as you can get, that participate in virtual communities and stuff like that partially because of what they've had to go through, but also partially because they were all taught to be homogenous, to be part of the collective and all this stuff with other people that were in a lot of ways very similar to themselves.
Well, not
they didn't have that. They didn't have that variety of experience that you need to have when you're growing up, dealing with different kinds of people. And yeah, sometimes some things will clash. Okay, fine, but that's all part of growing up, is learning how to get along with lots of different people.
Well, not just that, you know, but our school system that you were talking about earlier, they say that you're not going to interact with age-appropriate individuals. We used to have our children interact with all ages of individuals. From the young to the very, very old. That no longer happens anymore. So again, you know, we create a Lord of the Flies type scenario where our children are only associating with other children, only learning and only speaking to those children about those things that those children know that they're getting from our education system. And never once are they actually interacting with people of a different age group, learning what they know, learning from their wisdom and their experience.
Right, exactly. Quick example I just thought of is that, and you won't hear me recommending a lot of mainstream stuff a lot, but I will make an exception for this one. South Park. Anyone who's watched South Park, I mean, that is like looking into the eye of hell, in a manner of speaking. But for example, look how the four main characters, Stan, Kyle, Kenny, and Cartman, look how, as fourth graders, their fear, I mean, we're not talking like something else, we're talking like literal fear, like in various different episodes of South Park. Look how their fear as fourth graders are of the sixth graders, and who are portrayed in a caricature as these kind of bullying guys on bicycles, kind of like a kid version of like a motorcycle gang, basically. That's what the archetype's supposed to be. But notice how that is. It's like, well, and I know it's a cartoon show and it's satirical, okay, fine. But what I'm saying is that look how, as fourth graders, there's all this hostility between them, or at least fear and subjugation, or however you want to think of that as. It's basically very acrimonious, let's put it that way, between them and the sixth graders. That's literally retarded. Yet in real life, you can also see this a lot of times with the differences between high schoolers and people in like lower grades or whatever. You can also see this in various other ways and means. So don't listen to me. Look at your own experiences. But there isn't a, for lack of a better term, there isn't a very cosmopolitan attitude about it at all. It's very much a caste-like system. Very much so. Very rarely is it anything outside of that. So notice all this talk about diversity, 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 yet it's about as homogenous and caste-like as you can get. Absurdly so. Oh, well, I can't go date Jenny because, you know, she's in the sophomore class and I'm just a lowly freshman. Or she's a junior and I'm a freshman. How many times have we all heard stuff like that? It's ridiculous. It is literally asinine. But people literally, not just the children themselves when they're in the system, but also a lot of the adults too take it very seriously because in a lot of ways they're a product, they're an eventual product of it. So here's the thing, guys. If you want to see what your civilization is going to eventually become in like the next generation, or at least the next version or quote unquote update, look at the schools. That is basically what the civilization is going to be more or less turning into in a lot of ways. And I know some detractors are going to say stuff like, well, that's when they're children. When they grow up to be adults, they'll be more responsible. Okay, fine, but you're assuming that you have to perfectly account for all variables. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is look at what's happening in terms of their upbringing, what they were taught of as normal. In a lot of ways, the caste system of a high school or of or a middle school or elementary school in a lot of ways mimics it in a kind of a workplace situation too. And I'm not talking like in a normal, proper way with making sure everybody has their assigned roles to get their jobs done. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying where it's this really weird kind of psychotic, I don't want to say hierarchical. That's not what I mean, because hierarchy can be a good thing. It's all about how you use it. But it's where it's basically where if you have incompetent people that technically have a higher position, that means they're better or should be in a leadership position just because they're in a higher position. It's like, no, it should be based on merit, right? Wrong. Because it was all about how, look at what everybody learned when they were in school. What were they taught? They were taught basically that if you weren't popular, if you weren't the sexy girl, the popular football player, whatever, you're a geek or otherwise not worth it, which doesn't make any sense. But then you look at the adult side of it, or the quote-unquote adult side, or what passes for being an adult. It's all this Hollywood celebrity Madison Avenue stuff, in which case you're just regurgitating what happened in high school, which means my thesis is correct.
Well, not only that, but look at the deeper ramifications of it. Divide and conquer, creating factions within our own society, within our own communities. We also encourage children to disassociate with one another. Hence, putting to rest that whole argument that the school system says itself, where they need to be immersed within all these different cultures and all this diversity coming together as one. No, we encourage this within the schools themselves. The school creates a lot of these different factions and different groups and organizations within the school.
Right, exactly. I mean, how many times have folks heard about like the clique? The clique of the football players, the clique of the beautiful people, the clique of the geeks, the clique of this and all that. that is the stuff that happens in real life. And then, of course, it's all reinforced through predictive programming elements. Like, for example, in the first Twilight movie, if you want a somewhat recent example, but various other television shows and movies, they then reinforce what's been happening in real life. So now people are kind of getting this, there's a certain familiarity with it. And in one sense, it's kind of a blending of reality and fiction. I don't want to get too much into predictive programming because that's a subject all to itself. But suffice it to say, for those of you already familiar with it, you know where I'm getting at. So again, staying on topic, yeah, it's all the same stuff all over again, and it's really just not good. It's all part of this plastic Madison Avenue stuff. So getting away from it, what are your other options? So let's say you pull your kid out of the public schools. What else can you do? Well, you have a couple options. Let's take a look at it. Well, one is to put them in a private school. Okay, what are the pros and cons? Well, pros is that you can kind of select your private school and whatever. You can see, you know, what the curriculum is and whether it's religiously based or secular based, and if and what, you know, sub flavors of those that exist are, and, you know, where they're located near you and all that kind of good stuff, how much the tuition is and whatever. Although here's the problem, the number one main problem that people have had private schools is because they're just too gall darn expensive, which is a common problem. That is true. But also
in today's economy.
Right. Now, keep in mind, well, don't get me started on that subject, because that's interrelated with this, too. But suffice it to say that, yeah, I mean, if you didn't have the government schools, which are a type of monopoly that is maintained by the coercive power of the state, which is literally the initiation of violence against innocent people, but, of course, that's a subject itself for another time. Yeah, literally, the monopoly of government schools artificially raises the cost of any private sector versions. So literally, if you had a total abolition of the state, you would have affordable, you know, market processes would actually make private schools affordable. Well, not only because they would be one of the options that would be left, but also because you wouldn't have this monopoly screwing around with market forces and making things cost more than they would. Also consider something else a lot of parents have noticed, which is, even if you send your kid to a private school, you are still forced through taxes to support the public schools. So what's happening is that you're paying twice for each kid. Once in taxes to fund the public school that they aren't attending, and a second time through your voluntary choice to send them to a private school in the form of like tuition, books, and all that. So that's kind of another problem with the private school option, is you're paying twice for each child you have, or each child that you send to private school in any case. You know, that's kind of a problem too. Now also consider another problem with the private school aspect is that, you know, some people have mentioned that, oh, if we get school vouchers, or, oh, maybe if the government subsidized some stuff or whatever the case is, then, yeah, it's, well, I mean, then is it really a private school anymore? And unfortunately, a lot of private schools have been going that route. Some of them are still holding out, which is a very good thing. That is exactly what they need to be doing. But again, Randy, as you mentioned about like the ongoing depression, not a recession. It is we're in depression numbers. Okay, look at the real rate of unemployment, and then tell me I'm wrong. But yeah, it's kind of another problem too. Is that it's the affordability issue, which is a very real issue, which is why I'm even talking about it. In fact, one of the guys in the chat room, one of the Anons, mentions that he founded a charter school and was spending $285 a month. Yeah, although ironically, in a lot of ways, you're actually spending a lot more than that in terms of taxes. But again, that would be a discussion for another time about taxes. Suffice it to say, though, that, yeah, it's just... So the private school thing could technically work, but here's the thing. Unless you're sending your child to a monetarily cheap private school, which is what happened with me, unless you're going to do that and I've been lucky to find one that's relatively close to where you live, then private schools really aren't an option for most people, unless you're like a wealthy libertarian type, in which case, you know, go for it, have fun with it. But realize, even if you are the wealthy libertarian type, all the other libertarians and all the other dissidents and anyone else who has a conscience doesn't have as many Federal Reserve notes that you do, which means they can't send their child to a private school even though they don't like public schools. So then that gets into the other option. What else is there? There's homeschooling. Now, let me preface this by saying that homeschooling is not for everybody. Okay, there's a lot of things that take it to make it work, and I will get into that. But the one good thing about it is that you're combining the best element, or at least a lot of the good elements of a private school, with the fact that it's, if you do it right, you can have it be absurdly cheap financially. That's why we're mainly pushing homeschooling right now, is that it's really the kind of best all-around option from every perspective you can think of. Now, yeah, there's a couple ways it could go down badly, but, you know, the private school thing, it would work if a couple of things work, especially in the monetary end, but it's just not happening for most people right now. So homeschooling is also a child of necessity as well. Do keep that in mind. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like leaderless resistance, where leaderless resistance, the cell system, is kind of a child of necessity, because even if you prefer an actual, like, militarily organized hierarchy with people following orders and an external leadership and all that, in the educational realm, that would kind of be like having a private school in one sense. But again, there's a child necessity, so kind of like leaderless resistance, okay, they kind of got homeschooling. Okay, it's kind of like the same thing. Even if you prefer the other version, this is kind of like the default or something that everybody can at least get started with. So let's go at it from that way. Now, let me first say that a lot of people confuse homeschooling with something called unschooling. Now, I want to make this really, really, really clear. Unschooling is not the same thing as public schooling, or excuse me, homeschooling. Let me say that one more time to get it correct. Excuse me. See, homeschoolers can make mistakes too. Unschooling is not the same thing as homeschooling. Unschooling is not the same as homeschooling. Here's why. Homeschooling, you're basically trying to recreate a school environment at home or something similar to that. You will still have something resembling a curriculum. You still have something resembling, maybe not necessarily homework, but the point is that the child has to do at least some level of actual doing work of some kind. And it doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to take all day. It can be as short as, like, an hour. You know, depending on how fast the child works, some children may take 2 hours or 5 hours. Other kids may take, you know, 20 minutes. It depends how the materials are organized. It depends how fast they can work, because some kids are really good, other ones aren't, and other ones are mediocre. But the point is that you can tailor make it, you can customize it in such a way to have them develop their weaknesses and overcome that, as well as emphasizing their strengths. So that's another key thing about homeschooling, is that you can customize it. Now, here's the problem with unschooling. Unschooling was this notion that, oh, well, children are natural learners, and if they just kind of go off in 60,000 different directions, then supposedly they'll learn something. Now here's kind of the thing about that. A lot of homeschoolers, the ones that actually kind of understand what's going on, not big fans of unschooling. And so when people do start unschooling thinking that it's homeschooling, then there's kind of a certain level of infighting, which unfortunately is kind of unavoidable because they don't know what they're doing. The reason that unschooling is not so cool is because what happens a lot of the time, there's always a difference between like theory and practice. So the theory of unschooling is what it is. The practice of it is essentially where the next thing you know, they're just playing video games 6 hours a day. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. And you know what? Sometimes that can happen with homeschoolers too. But the problem is that with unschoolers, it pretty much happens with nearly all of them. So it's kind of not a good scene. And what it really produces is an excuse to be lazy. Now, let's keep in mind, to be intellectually honest, that can happen with homeschoolers as well. But usually there's a better chance for success because there is something resembling a curriculum, even a flexible one. You can have a flexible curriculum. That's fine. It doesn't have to be this rigid whatever, but the children do need to be taught. And it doesn't have to last all day either. See, that's another misconception, Randy, is that, oh, they must be doing stuff for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day, whatever the typical, you know, public school school day is. No. Depending on the child, because you need to custom tailor it, it can go as fast as an hour, like a day, and then they have the rest of the day to, like, go have a life, to go play outside, to, who knows, maybe even start their own lemonade stand.
You know, it's very true. In fact, you know, Mickey, he's 9 years old. And he's been going to one of the top schools here in Ohio, in Oak Harbor. They have, you know, an award-winning school here for excellence in academics. He's been going there for 3 months. Now, he is not a stupid child. In fact, this kid, I'm actually really impressed with his level of creative thought. And in the school system, he was behind coming from his other school to this new school. So that was part of a drawback. But if the school's as good as they claim to be, and the educators are as good as they are propped up to be, they should have been able to get him caught up rather relatively quickly. 3 months later, he's still struggling. I decide that I'm going to take over now. And in less than a week of maybe 30 minutes a day, he's excelling in his classroom amongst even beyond where the other students are. That's 30 minutes a day that I spent with him on his homework. Now imagine where he'd be at, you know, imagine if where he would be at if I spent 2 hours a day with him on it. And I didn't even have to worry about the school anymore. Which right, is something exactly. I'm looking at, you know, which is something I'm looking at right now. You know, I myself am actually looking at homeschooling these boys right now. Unfortunately, you know, we got a little problem with CPS and three of the boys because of their father. So as soon as we get those three back, we have to play the little game for CPS. But as soon as we get those boys back, I really am looking at online courses for the boys and homeschooling myself.
Right. And Dale, that's fantastic. Now, here's something else that kind of everyone needs to consider, too, is, you know, once you have gone through your typical, you know, whatever the curriculum is for that week or that day, because there's lots of different ways you can construct this, and I will be getting to it, I promise, is look at all the extracurricular stuff that can be done, but depending on what it is, can be very educational itself. And I'll just use myself as an example here. I was a Boy Scout. Okay, I went through the ranks. What's interesting is that in a lot of ways that can be very educational. I would like to read some of the current rank requirements very briefly. So, for example, tenderfoot rank requirement 4B. Demonstrate that you know how to tie the following knots and tell what their uses are. The two half hitches and the tautline hitch. Or let's skip to... let us skip to one on second class rank requirement 3C. Demonstrate the proper care, sharpening, and use of the knife. Oh my gosh, children with knives. We can't. If they go in the public schools, that's awful. Oh, we need metal detectors and treat it like a police state. Ah, sorry. Anyway, second class requirement 3C. Demonstrate proper care, sharpening, and use of the knife, saw, and axe. Yes, giving children axes. And describe when they should be used. Okay, so when was the last time a public school taught anybody how to use a knife, saw, or axe properly? When was the last time they taught anybody about knot tying? I'm using these as examples. Now this is where it gets interesting. Tenderfoot rank requirement number 6. Demonstrate how to display, raise, lower, and fold the American flag. See how that works? Now, we can also, now for those of you that are more preppers, you guys will appreciate some of this kind of stuff. First class requirement number 1, demonstrate how to find directions during the day and at night without using a compass. And I can tell you from memory that one of the things we had to learn was the shadow stick method, among others. Let's see, what else is good here? Oh, let's look at the first aid related things. First class requirement 8C, show how to transport by yourself and with one other person a person from a smoke-filled room as well as with a sprained ankle for at least 25 yards. So there are lots of things that even in an extracurricular sense can be educational depending on what you pick. So a lot of the content of like what somebody would go through the Boy Scouts would be very good. To learn and could also translate, and that can form the foundation itself for other things. For example, if you're the type of guys who like to go out and camp and hunt, like camp on a hunting trip, well, how would you, and let's say you have a child, how, and let's just assume it's a boy just to keep this simple. Let's say you want to take your son hunting or whatever, how would you get, if you want to take him hunting when he's like 12 or something, how would you start poor teenagers who don't want to wait that long, how would you start doing that? Well, maybe you go camping a little bit. Well, then how do you go camping? See, well, what's a tent? You know, a lot of, I find it funny. A lot of the guys who are dissidents of one kind or another, but specifically survivalists, they always talk about bugging out, right? For this ad nauseum, bugging out. Or the other version, which is properly called bunkering in. There's no such thing as a bug-in, by the way. That's stupid. It's bunkering in, because by staying in, like being in a bunker, that's why it's called bunkering in. So bug out and bunkering in. Well, bugging out would assume that you know how to camp and to hike. And the problem is that a lot of well-meaning guys haven't even gone camping, like, ever. They don't know what it's like to not sleep with a roof over their head. So that's kind of problem number one there. So maybe some level of training can kind of get started. Guess what? You have to learn how to set up a tent. See, that's another thing, is that maybe for like a or let me put it this a different way. Maybe for like one science class thing for one day of your homeschooling, you practice cooking outside without using a stove, just like a campfire or something like that. Oh, wow, really? Cooking outside using fire? But fire's dangerous. We're not supposed to have... Sorry, I can't. I have to make fun of some people sometimes, Randy. It's too easy, like with the knives. Oh, my gosh, knives are evil.
I agree. I mean,
but we were all told.
It gets down to the point, it's getting down to the point where we're much like that movie. I made a comment about this in the chat room about the movie Idiocracy. Have you seen that?
People have recommended it to me. I haven't yet had a chance to see it, but I've seen some clips of it, yeah.
Talk about the outcome of a dumbed down society. Even though it's a comedy, it really brings to point the issues that we're going to have in the future when our children are so incompetent that they don't even know you water crops with water and not Gatorade type products.
That's pretty pathetic.
And when somebody with an IQ in the 105 range, 95 to 105 range, is truly the most intelligent man on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't... Here's kind of the other kind of basic point, too, is that you can't go about securing your liberties if you can't think straight. I think that's kind of what we're getting at with this particular broadcast, is that you need to think straight. So let's go ahead and try and get you guys started. All those various things, you can go back and listen to the earlier parts of the broadcast. But yeah, I mean, any of this stuff is really, really kind of important. And something I kind of also want you to mention too, Randy, that I've been kind of noticing, that's in one sense it's fine, I guess, but since I've done it myself and know other people that did it and kind of figured out how kind of stupid it was, I'm not as big on it. And what's interesting, and I understand in one sense, to try to make homeschooling more mainstream by saying, oh, we can get homeschoolers into college, right?
Right.
Well, guess what? I have a bachelor's. Okay, I've done it. I have, I was a homeschooler, and I went to college. I graduated. So, rah-rah, whatever. Okay, so now I have experienced it. It's kind of like when a veteran comes back and tells you about his combat experiences. They have actually done the thing that you guys just talk about. It's like, okay, let me do it on this end of things. Guess what? College sucks. It's stupid. It's literally retarded. Unless you're going to go get an engineering degree or something like that where it's very technical like that, unless you're going to go be an engineer or a doctor, I think that's pretty much those two at this point. And ironically, for the doctor thing, that's kind of stupid for other reasons. But anyway, unless you're going to go become an engineer or a doctor, college is a waste of money. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of your adrenal glands, too, because you're going to be stressed all that time studying until 3 a.m. in the morning like I did and other people I knew did, trying to make sure that we can get at least half a decent grade, or maybe what does the professor want on the exam when we take the blue book exam thing? What answer does the professor want? And trying to figure all that stuff out. Look, and again, I don't want to totally seem like a dick here, but here's the problem. Yeah, it makes sense why some people want to make it go mainstream. I've heard recently about this guy called Antonio Bueller, the guy here in Austin who had his own police state encounter. What people can go look him up. I'm not going to get into that. The point, though, is that one of the other things Bueller has been involved with interestingly, even before he became sexy because of his police brutality encounter, was he was very big on helping homeschoolers in general. And one of those various things he would like to do is trying to get homeschoolers into college, which sounds good, right? It sounds fantastic. Homeschoolers getting in college, homeschooling, going mainstream, rah, rah, go team, right? Here's the problem, though. Why are you going to college? I mean, just seriously, why is anyone going to college? It doesn't matter if you went for private school, public school, or homeschooling. Why is anybody going to college? Really, why? And supposedly, the reason why everyone goes to college is because, well, if you get a bachelor's or preferably even a master's or and even a doctorate, then that means you can earn, what's that like completely flawed statistic, Randy, about you can supposedly earn more than $1 million in your life over the course of your lifetime than you would have without it, which is completely made up?
Well, you know what? Right now, I went to school. I have 3 degrees. I got my degrees within a 2.5-year period. I have a degree in business management. I have a degree in marketing. And I have a degree in marketing with an emphasis on electronic advertising. And I have a degree in psychology. My bachelor's degree in psychology qualifies me to become an orderly in a psych ward. I make barely above minimum wage. My bachelor's degrees in business are worthless because any real corporation or anything like that now no longer cares about bachelor's degree. They don't even care about a master's degree. They're looking for dual masters. Do you know how long it takes to get a dual master's?
Forever.
Now, in the state of New Mexico, this is actually coming from the state itself. There are statistics. The average individual that has a high school education makes $7 to $8 an hour. The average individual with a bachelor's degree was making around $10 an hour. You just spent $40,000 to get your degree to make $2 an hour more. I say self-employment is the way to go.
Well, yeah, and that's
not required.
Right, and that's kind of the other thing. Like, there's been new information coming out about how college is basically a big scam, and I agree with it in large part because I've actually done it. Kind of like when a veteran comes back and says that the wars are all a lie. I'm saying the same thing on college, specifically. For example, anybody can go look at – I remember the National Inflation Association, the NIA – came out with a documentary that actually has been attempted to be suppressed, actually, which I find interesting, but not too surprised about. The documentary was called College Conspiracy. Go to YouTube right now, and I mean right now, go to YouTube, type in College Conspiracy, and there should be at least one mirrored version of that up. And, you know, the NIA, you can go to their website, inflation.us, go to the articles section. They've written many articles, not just about their own documentary they produced, but also kind of fleshing in that boring thing called reading. They kind of flesh out certain details with how much it's a scam and, you know, whatever with all of that. And so I find this interesting, Randy, since, you know, today's thing was about homeschooling is – okay, yeah, I mean, homeschooling is a good thing for a lot of reasons, okay. Here's the problem, though. Why do you have people who are pro-homeschooling saying you need to go to college? Don't they know any better? Here's the problem. They, too, are believing the exact same lie that's being told to their public school counterparts. That's why. A lot of the private schools, same deal. In fact, several of the private schools kind of portray themselves as college prep. Several of them do anyway. So we have these three different sectors of different types of schooling, pretty much all of them, saying how great college is good. It doesn't matter whether college is the public or private version, but it's all the same for the most part, except one will just be more costly. But even with the ones that's less costly, I mean, look at all the people with outstanding student loans. I mean, how long does it take to pay off a student loan? Does anybody know?
I know people that are in their 40s and that are in their late 40s that are still paying on their damn student loans, and they graduated 20 years ago.
Now, who profits from having all of those student loans taking so long to pay off? Who profits from that exactly?
Banks, the government, because most of those are government loans.
Now, this is interesting. So I'm not – now, just to be clear, I'm not saying the homeschoolers who are saying go to college are being evil or bad. I'm not saying that about Buehler specifically either. What I am saying is that in terms of looking at the methods we're using to try and get a better situation for ourselves, maybe we should look at the stuff that doesn't work and really sit down and say, do we need to change tactics here? You know, with other things, which I will not talk about here, I've said this before with other types of things, and people have had visceral reactions. Well, I don't care if they have a visceral reaction with this one. I'm sorry, this is too important. Homeschoolers should never go to college. Only exception would be engineering, but that's it. Everything else, you can either learn online, you can get a used college textbook and study it, and whatever. Here's the other thing. I mentioned earlier about Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin got apprenticed at a printer shop. Okay, he was an apprentice. Okay, that's what we need again is the apprenticeship system. So again, how can the homeschoolers go on this route? Well, if you do your typical curriculum or whatever it is in 2 hours, 1 hour, 20 minutes, however fast, however quickly you can work, and how depending on your workload, you still have the rest of the day. Maybe you should have your homeschoolers get an apprenticeship ASAP. That would be like, as a parent, that would be one of the absolute best things you could do. I wish I had an apprenticeship. Let me put it that way. I'm not blaming my family or my parents or anything like that, but what I'm saying is if I had a chance to do it again, I would have gotten an apprenticeship when I was still in the equivalent of high school. That's how important it is, and that's why I'm getting so uppity about it, is because I understand how important it is. Having been been on various different sides of things, now with this kind of more well-rounded perspective of sorts, I can kind of say, hey, this worked, the homeschooling thing, but this other thing called college doesn't work. And it didn't matter what you were doing before college. By virtue of the fact you went in and did it with your student loans and everything else, they don't teach you anything. The specific one I went to was known as a research university. They literally told us during freshman orientation, Randy, that the professor's primary job was not to teach us but to do research. They explicitly told us that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and me being naive, I just, whatever. But now I know better. It's like, they weren't kidding. And I talked with a couple buddies of mine who went to other schools that were private colleges, but it was kind of the same problem, even though they weren't designated as research universities. So it's kind of an all-encompassing problem.
Well, here's an interesting thing. When I was going to school, I was working for at the time it was a regional ad agency. They basically did media buys for the big Madison Avenue corporate giants. I was working there in the advertising. I was working there in the market research and analysis department, as well as in the actual advertising department, bringing in clients. One of my first clients, in fact, was Starbucks, before it became the company that everybody knows now. Starbucks used to be owned by a lady in Seattle. She had a few shops downtown. Wanted to expand. Eventually, she went IPO, sold it off. Somebody else bought it. It is what it is now. I was going to school, getting my degrees in marketing with an emphasis on electronic advertising. And while I'm in my classes, now keep in mind, okay, I'm doing this already. Some of my ad campaigns included Hitachi. While I'm getting my degree, I'm doing all the advertising for Hitachi in North America, well, the U.S. and Canada, anyways. What they were teaching me there had no real life application and was 100% opposite of what I was actually doing. And well, we see where Hitachi is today. When I took on Hitachi, they were a nobody. You couldn't give Hitachi equipment away. They teach you theory in school. They teach you very little in school. They teach you no actual hands-on application, which is why usually when you get out with a college degree, you have to start in an internship program, which means you get paid jack to be a slave because you don't know how to do the job. That's the reality of our college system anymore. I mean, the highest percentage of unemployed people out there right now are brand new college graduates. Why? Because they can't do the job yet, because they've never actually been taught how to work. They've never actually been taught the job itself. They've been taught how to do a little math, how to do this, how to do that, but never actually how to the actual application and implementation of any of these ideas or theories.
Right, and so it's kind of interesting, you know, reading, like, job hunting books. You know, I was kind of, you know, I've read a bunch of them. And so, see, it's that thing called reading again. Oh, sorry, I had to. But, yeah, that little thing called reading. So on my own, I had to, even in college, get a bunch of job hunting books. And I was kind of dawning on me, like, why don't they have, like, you know, that was the other thing that kind of ticked me off about college, too, Randy, was that there was... So I went to – my intention was to go study the one thing that was my major. That is why I was going to college. Most of the time, I didn't do that. Most of the time, I was taking their required supposed curriculum thing where they give you a little bit of choice with some stuff. But otherwise, it was pretty – it was absurdly rigid. Here's the thing, though. That stuff was kind of useless, or it was stuff I already knew, in which case – You know, and sometimes with some stuff you were able to test out of it, but other cases there was no option. You had to go through the motions and go do a bunch of busy work. See, that's the thing too that the public school system does too, is all of this busy work, which doesn't help you do anything. It wastes your time, gets you frustrated, and you're stressed and everything else. And then it's, again, remember what I said earlier about time being a key aspect of control. I mean, what do you think mainline homework is? Mainline homework assignments are nothing more than time control, because of the time and effort you would have to spend on that instead of actually doing something to make your own life better, learning a job skill, taking up an apprenticeship, etc. Here's the thing. Even if you're in a public school situation, what if instead of doing homework, everyone just went after school, like after 3 p.m. or whenever you get out, you just went to your apprenticeship job for a few hours? See, that way you would have actual work experience. No, can't do that. Now you have to go do homework for 7 hours or however long it takes. See, that's another kind of problem right there. So, but I was kind of surprised too that even at the collegiate level, supposed, I gotta love this term, higher education, nothing higher about it. It's about as low as you can get, by the way. Oh, it's a total lie. It's kind of like when the pull on police cars, when they say to protect and serve, you know, it's like to protect and serve whom? You? Like, no.
The
I love
snake.
That. Yeah, exactly. Well, that and their corporate goons and all that. But yes, it's the same thing. It's the corporatocracy and a few other things. You know, I kind of love that, just a quick aside. I kind of like that one South Park joke where Officer Barbary, you know, drives up and in the cop car, and it says to annoy and to patronize. It's like, yeah, they do annoy and patronize. That's when they're feeling nice, when they're not tasering you. But anyway, yeah, it's not higher learning. It's not higher learning.
What was that movie? Transformers. What did it say on the side of the car? To enslave and tyrannize.
Something like that. But yeah, it's just it's all, yeah, no, it's high, supposed higher education. That's blatant propaganda in the negative context. That's blatant propaganda. It has nothing to do with that at all. It's about as low as it comes. So, I mean, let me put it this way. Not everything that happened to me during college was bad, but most of it was. Some stuff was okay. I did meet some fantastic people occasionally, once in a while, and I did have some good courses with some professors, again, once in a while, but most of it I could adjust. I mean, I even went to more of an affordable college, too, kind of like the cheap private school when I was younger, you know, try to go to an affordable college. I didn't even think it was even worth that much that I went for the tuition. It's just like, no, I don't think so. I mean, if we're dealing with the actual free market dynamics, it was grossly overpriced, and that was an affordable one I went to, not like your run-of-the-mill one, which is just obscenely priced, and I haven't even started with the private colleges, which are worse. You know, I mean, it's – sorry, I didn't mean to go on and on about that, but that's kind of a big deal. Well, so no, if you're a homeschooler, do not send your child to college. Get them to do an internship, because – you know, I've been unemployed for about 2 years now.
So how's that education degree working out for you?
Well, the bachelor's doesn't help at all. But here's the thing, though, is that, well, what's gotten me just existing at all is stuff I learned when I was homeschooled. That's what's been keeping me alive this entire time. See, that's the bigger joke. So when you have some well-intentioned people like an Antonio Bueller type, who is saying, oh, I'll sell you my services to help get your homeschool kid into college. No, that is absolutely the wrong thing to do. If you want to do something else, if you want to sell, be an entrepreneur for homeschoolers and sell your services, here's what you do. You sell your service to parents to help get their kid put together a resume and get them an apprenticeship. That is what you do. So, I just threw out a free business plan for anybody that wants to take it up and make money off of it. Just gave you a free business idea.
You know, here's something else. You know, get some other individuals in your community, you know, fellow patriots, who are willing to start an apprenticeship program. You know, carpenters, contractors, whatever it is they do. Teach them actual skills. Whether it's in the business community or the trades, whatever. Actually try and teach our kids actual real-life application skills. Forget that $40,000 a year degree and going up, what? I mean, the average, what is it, the average school now, that always costs, what, $18,000, $20,000 now?
Yeah, it's something like that.
A year?
Yeah, exactly. Here's the other problem, too. The reason why college degrees used to be valuable and important was because relatively few people had them. Last time I checked, it's like over 70% of the pop, or something along those lines. It's like well over 50, but it's like 70%-ish amount of the population has at least a bachelor's. Here's a problem. It's kind of like if a resource isn't scarce, it's not valuable. Here's the thing. The value of a college degree has gone down because so many people have one. So why the hell are you paying so much for something that isn't even valuable anymore?
Not just that, but also take a look, you know, think of it, this is something else to consider. Here's what I'm finding out in the real world. This is real life hand application. I got three of those damn things. All I hear is overqualified, and I can't get a job at Verizon selling cell phones. Why? Because I'm overqualified.
And see, that's another kind of key aspect for control. You can't get even a job that's well beneath you, and then you have to go on welfare, whatever the case is, so that you're dependent on the system. See, guys, there's a reason all of this happens. It's actually, again, as I said before, you know, I'll give the enemy credit. They planned this very, very well, and it wasn't – and here's the funnier part. It wasn't that hard at all. All they had to do is focus their attention on some key aspects, and they knew ahead of time what the ripple effects were going to be. I mean, Randy and other people can tell you about the background for all of that, but what I'm saying is that here's stuff that's happening right now. Here's how we can get past it. So let's focus on a little bit of something happier for the last little bit. I think there was kind of the reference about, like, what's patriot-style homeschooling? Well, there's a lot of different ways you can take this up. Now, this is, again, assuming that you've been homeschooling for a while and you've done your 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. You've done all your basics, and now you kind of want to change it up. Your kids want to kind of get out from the kitchen table. Oh, that's another reference, by the way, is the kitchen table being the classroom, basically. So your kids want to get out from the kitchen table and want to get outside and do something. Okay, cool. Well, I'll just mention the one I mentioned earlier as well. But maybe for one period or the science class for that day, the science lesson, learn how to build a campfire and then cook like pancakes over it or something. And then you get to have lunch at the same time. Hey, see how that works. PE. PE could be something like not just running, but, and I think you guys know where I'm going to go with this, practice running for about 3 to 5 seconds, going between different elements in the environment that provide a combination of cover and concealment. You see how that works? That could be PE class, is literally teaching the kids how to do rushes. They don't have to hold anything in their hands. That can come later. I'm not talking about guns. I'm saying that is a key skill for other things that can be developed later, if you know what I mean. But that can be, you can make it a game too. See, I've noticed a lot of, you know, militia and other types of guys or whatever who don't do stuff like that. I was like, well, that's kind of like a basic infantry skill. I'm just saying. But it's also, you can make it fun too. Like, oh, you know, maybe make a little obstacle course or something. Or maybe go out to your Uncle Jimbo's, you know, place that's like half an hour away and go run around in his, you know, back 40 or whatever. That could be like PE class for the day. You know, I mentioned about, again, kind of like the other example too earlier that I mentioned with maybe for math class or economics, you go to the grocery store. And you can learn about addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, or at the very least just addition and subtraction if you want to keep it that simple, and learn how to calculate, if Mary wanted to buy, you know, a 1 pound of whole wheat flour and it costs like $3.26. But then if there was another package of whole wheat flour that was 5 pounds and it cost $4, which would be the more economical purchase for her to make? How far could she stretch? How far could she stretch the value of her dollar? See, that would be like, no, I made that absurdly simple, but that's to kind of make the point. But the point is, you don't have to have it be on a page and a book or something. You can actually take the kids out to the actual grocery store and actually kind of posit that to them and kind of practice doing this over and over again. Or, you know, maybe if your kids like eat potato chips or something, do it with potato chips. You know, make it relevant to their lives. That's kind of another key thing, too, that I think a lot of folks kind of missing is making it relevant. Now, you don't have to dumb it down. I'm not saying that. You do have to have some of it be challenging because that's the only way things move forward, as any entrepreneur can tell you. But, yeah, I mean, there's various ways you can do stuff both at home, literally homeschooling, that's what it means, in at the kitchen table, at the proverbial kitchen table. But you can also go out and do field trips. And then when the kids are older, you know, get them an apprenticeship too. I mean, so there's lots of things you can do. So as far as Patriot style homeschooling goes, you know, I got to say, you know, you can also have a class period where you're focusing on food procurement. And obviously for one of those things of food procurement, one of the best ways to train is to, you know, grab that 22 and go to a gun range. That's food procurement, if anybody asks. By the way, you see what I did there? We're combining brushes with food procurement, quote-unquote food procurement. You see what I'm getting at? So that's kind of important, guys. You don't need and you shouldn't be running, you know, putting your kids up in camis. That's stupid. That's beyond retarded for lots of reasons. No, you're teaching them skills that they can use later, especially if things get interesting. But even if they don't get interesting, their lives are still better off even if no emergencies happen. So you're covering your bases any which way you go. And let's put it this way. Would you rather your kids be sucked into the virtual video game nonsense type of stuff, a lot of which I had when I was growing up? Or would you rather have them go outside and do stuff? Now, again, considering my own life, I've done both. And I can say being in real life is a lot better. I'm the first one to say that.
Well, you know, a lot of these things that you were talking about just now in this last segment, you know, Colonel Cross up here with OHMM, we've been talking about this for a while. In fact, this summer, you know, since the Boy Scouts really aren't teaching much of anything, you don't have to demonstrate, you have to discuss or demonstrate, but not actually do. Cross is actually going to be putting on we joke around, we call it a Junior Minuteman camp, but it's going to be a week-long camp, the beginning part of it. We're going to teach these kids all the stuff the Boy Scouts use to self-reliance and independence, build up some self-esteem, and then throughout the rest of the summer, we're going to continue to teach them things. Marksmanship, bows, rifles, things like that. We're going to teach them all different kinds of things, and basically it's a, you know, well, we jokingly refer to it as a junior militia program. You know, the Junior Minuteman program.
Or maybe more on the homesteading or hunting side of things or whatever. I mean, for example, can anybody listening, I'm just going to pose this real quickly. Can anybody who's listening to us right now, can you skin a squirrel? Can you skin and gut a squirrel and cook the meat? Can you do it? Just yes or no. See, that's the kind of thing that we need a remedy, is stuff like that. So, yes, there is the more quote-unquote bookish stuff. Logic, rhetoric, grammar, math, science, etc. But there's also kind of the practical hands-on skills. Quick example, Randy. I remember there was a friend of a friend who was a girl who, you know, I met in college, and she literally had to learn on the fly how to wash dishes. Like, literally. I mean, she had been alive for almost 2 decades, and she never had to wash dishes ever. And I was like, are you joking? Like, no, what's this scrubby thing for? That's what you use. You put water in the soap.
You know, Nikki's friends, none of them have to do chores. And he's upset because he's got to do chores, and it's not fair. You know, what are these kids going to do when they actually turn 18 and have to move out? Oh, wait a minute. Kids can't move out at 18 anymore because, hell, we got 50-year-olds living with their parents in the basement now because they can't get jobs. We got 40-year-olds living in the basement. In the parents' basements because they can't get jobs. We got 30-year-olds who have never left home. this is what we're raising our kids to be in America now.
Yeah, that's kind of a big problem. And as a quick side note about chores, while the repetitious nature of chores can be annoying, and believe me, I'll be the first to say it, overall it's a good thing because think about it this way, especially for those of you that might be on the younger side, consider this. If your chores, if you have to do like maybe two or three things, take out the trash and something else, think about this. When you eventually grow up and be a big person and like an adult or at least trying to pass yourself off as one, here's the thing. When you're living by yourself, at least initially when you're single, guess what? You get to do all of the chores by yourself all the time. Think about it that way. Now, if you're okay with that, then okay, it's your life. But what I'm saying is that if you're still living with your parents, whatever, and you grumble about taking out the trash or mowing the lawn or whatever your chores are, consider this. When you're out by yourself, guess what? You get to do absolutely everything by yourself. So make of it as you will. But that's kind of what a lot of us kind of had to discover when we got out from under our parents' thumbs, so to speak. So, you know, if you prefer one over the other, that's great. But don't just assume that, oh, this is so – no. Doing chores is actually really helpful, okay? Learning how to balance a checkbook, that's a big one. Oh, my gosh.
You know, most people, they can't even balance a checkbook anymore. Most adults do not know how to balance a checkbook. This is from the government, man. This is coming – you know, this is our own stats here. We have lost the ability to balance a checkbook. I was taught how to do that in school and by my parents.
Right, exactly. So we can kind of see this dumbing down. It's not just – I think what we're kind of getting at here, just for the benefit of the listeners, it's not just the dumbing down like in the intellectual stuff or bookish, if you want to prefer it that way. It's also with a lot of more kind of the quote-unquote boring but like day-to-day stuff of everyday life. I mean, does anybody know do you guys know how to like wash your own clothes? I mean, I would assume so, but – you know, a lot of people I knew didn't before college. That's kind of a problem because their mommy did it or whatever the case is. That's kind of the thing, is that if you want to be free, and the only guy I knew that explained this was Cody Lundeen, who is a well-known survivalist. He's been on Discovery Channel a lot. And he explained this correctly. And I'm going to use this as an example, being like a survivalist, for instance, is not about like being paranoid about emergencies or whatever. It's about the real core essence of it is about wanting to be free and being self-reliant. Even for those guys who aren't survivalists at all, I think they too can understand that being self-reliant, taking care of yourself, and by extension, eventually being an actual adult means taking care of others. That's about being self-reliant, self-governing, self-regulating, freedom, if you will. I mean, this is all part and parcel on that. You can't be free if you can't think. You can't be free or have liberty, or more appropriately, you can't have liberty if you're just some incompetent douche living in your parents' basement. I'm sorry. I mean, that is a limit of reality. You have to be able to actually know how to do some stuff and be able to pull it off well. And eventually, once you can kind of refine your reflexes and your skills and whatnot, then maybe once you can learn how to type a sentence correctly, maybe, just maybe, you can go off and be a self-supporting, somewhat financially secure adult. Although, keep in mind, guys, being an adult is not all about paying bills. That's kind of a fallacy by itself, but that can be addressed another time. The point is that you got to start from basics, and having a good education is really key. And so, Randy, if you don't mind, I'd like to throw out some possible websites where people can get started and homeschooling.
Yeah, go ahead, because we're at the 2-hour mark, and I've got a live tonight, so I'm actually going to go out, going to get with some people from my unit, going to go eat corned beef and cabbage stew tonight.
All right, just a few brief resources websites for you guys to get started off at. Now, the following websites I do not explicitly endorse. I'm still going through their material, but initially they seem okay. But again, double check out everything for yourself. I did post these in the chat room a little bit ago, but again, for the guys listening on the podcast version, I'll just tell you verbally. The first site is something called An Old Fashioned Education, which is located over at oldfashionededucation.com. That is oldfashionededucation.com. The nice thing about this site, it is religious, but a good aspect they do emphasize is that a lot of the books that the woman uses when she's homeschooling her kids are a lot of public domain books. So in a lot of ways, that'll kind of reduce costs, especially for textbooks and that kind of thing. Another good website is something just very simply called homeschool.com. That is homeschool.com. Another good one that seems at least somewhat okay was something called Ambleside Online. They are located over at AmblesideOnline.org. That is AmblesideOnline.org. And lastly, another one that looked interesting, and Randy, I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier about trying to look for online courses and or at least a pool of stuff that you can then custom tailor it to. One option that seemed interesting was something called Free World U, that is located over at freeworldu.org. Again, that is freeworldu.org. And so whether you take a look at Old Fashioned Education, homeschool.com, Ambleside Online, or Free World U, those are some initial places that anybody who doesn't have any experience whatsoever in homeschooling can at least get initially started and see if that is something they want to really get involved in. And also keep in mind, too, before I forget, you know, a lot of people have mentioned either about socialization issues or about, you know, maybe a parent is too I know we kind of touched on this earlier, but, you know, maybe a parent is a little bit too incompetent, at least in some subject areas, to teach it to their children. Something that the homeschoolers have devised that actually really works well, and I should know because I took part in this way back when, was something called homeschooling co-ops. Randy, you mentioned a little bit ago about what if, you know, some patriots got together and had like a apprenticeship type thing. Well, something that's not exactly that, but is in one sense kind of close to that, is where you have parents coming together and forming these homeschooling co-ops. So a co-op is kind of like how you would have, like, for a lot of the alternative medicine people or people that are like anti-GMO or whatever, you would have, like, you know, organic food co-ops. Well, similarly, you can have like a homeschooling co-op where literally you can have like a schedule and have like once a week classes with a parent or maybe somebody you very cheaply hire, like a very cheap tutor or something like that, come in and teach like one subject. Like maybe it's a math thing or a science thing or something more specialized or whatever the case is. And they can come in and teach like a, and you want to keep, and when you, if you decide to have those classes, you want to keep the student teacher ratios extremely small. You pretty much want to keep it pretty much 10 to 1 or something like that. Smaller would even be better. But preferably no larger than 10 to 1. And those tend to work out well. The homeschooling co-op classes work really well. Homeschool co-ops are also good for various other things. You can have social functions. You can have kind of like mutual support, social, like adult socializing things. So all the homeschooling parents can all kind of get together separate from their children, kind of do stuff that way. And a little bit on community building, a little bit. A lot of effects can take off of that. But that is something that actually has worked well, Randy, are homeschooling co-ops with their concomitant homeschooling classes. So that is something that has been done and is working quite well already. So again, for those of you getting interested in homeschooling or want to look more into that, you do not have to do it completely on your own. If you're working two or three jobs or whatever the case is, if you don't know, if you are good with everything in school for the most part, for whatever that's worth, except maybe math or something, you have options. You've got homeschooling co-op classes. You've got potential maybe really, really, really cheap tutors. There's lots of options open. But again, I would kind of suggest to everyone that homeschooling can take out a lot of ways, and it doesn't always have to be at the kitchen table. You can go out in the field in the back 40 and also do homeschooling there as well. But again, people take a look at those different websites, see what your options are. And look, I mean, as we move forward, as we try to secure our liberties, we've really got to focus on the next generation. That's what the enemy did. Look at the Fabian socialists. They were absolutely devastating in their effects by seizing control of the public schools. Look what happened. It works. You know that. Look at your own life. Now, if you want to make stuff better, do it with the next generation, but again, do it for, you know, good purposes, obviously. So, you know, Randy, that's just trying to kind of sum it up in a nutshell, just how important homeschooling is as a viable option for resisting tyranny.
I agree. You know, and there's something else here. There's another website that people should look at. The website is www.hslda.org. It's an advocate for homeschooling, and basically it's a bunch of attorneys and things like that who actually believe in homeschooling, the right for individuals to engage in their homeschooling rights because they understand the Constitution. And they're actually been making huge effects and changes within communities. All 50 states are posted there. Individuals working in all 50 states, so go check out the website. Like for those of you in Washington where they're trying to say you have to have a degree to homeschool your kids, go check it out. Take a look at it. I've actually been in contact with them. They've done a lot of work here in Ohio, and they've gotten a lot of things changed here in Ohio. They can do the same for you as well, hopefully. So with that being said, again, upcoming shows, we got this Sunday, don't know what's going on. This Sunday, I got Keith Browder coming on. Patriot who was seen through the fog and has realized that the elections do not work. Voting does not work. Protesting does not work. And in fact, almost everything else he was doing does not work. So he's completely shifted his gears, and we're going to talk to him. I've known the guy for 4 years. Probably one of the hardest working patriots I've ever met in my life, although I believe his actions were misguided. He's now jumped on board. In fact, he's wanting me to help him start setting things up in his area now. He's seen the light. We're going to be talking to him tomorrow. Former educator, retired teacher, and probably one of the most knowledgeable men on the Constitution that I know of. So he'll be joining us tomorrow. On Tuesday, we're going to have retired Colonel Joseph P. Martino on with us again for justification for resistance. What is that justification, lawful or moral? That's going to be one hell of a show as well. Following Sunday, not sure. I moved that show to the first Sunday of April. So not sure what we're going to have on then, but we're also going to have on Joe Martino on that following Tuesday as well. Going over goals of the resistance, as we mentioned earlier. You know, what we consider to be goals are not goals. These are pipe dreams. We want our freedom. We want the Constitution. Well, that's not a goal. What is your overall goal? How do you achieve goals? How do you make goals work into a workable, viable plan? Benchmarks of success, things like that. Presenting these goals to the community and so forth without seeming like a nutcase. Remember, without community support, you will not win in your resistance. You will not overthrow tyranny. You will not be free. You will lose. So we're going to have Joe on for those next two shows. And then the first Sunday in April, we're going to be having a militia roundtable. I'm getting several militia leaders from the, several of them are from here in Ohio. Smiter from Washington and Joseph Martino. We're each going to come to the table, or they're going to come to this table with a couple of issues, concerns, ideas, whatever it is. And we're going to brainstorm this thing, things how we can actually make our cause, our movement, our actions much more effective. Because right now, you know, there's some states were effective, other states, it's just lagging behind. And not just within units, but I'm talking about as a whole. I'm also going to try and get a civil authority type individual on there as well, because not everything is militia based. You know, that is the gist of our work here at U of Treadmy, that and the Committees of Safety, but other things as well. Also, I'm going to start bringing on discussions here starting up next month, more heavily involving predictive programming, the history of the New World Order, situational programming, the dumbing down of America, the agenda, if you will. You know, and everything that I'll be discussing is coming directly from the books and the mouths of the individuals who created this system in which we live. Again, if we don't know who thy enemy is, how do we know who the enemy is, and how do we know what to look for? You know, we're constantly being told, terrorists. Well, who are these terrorists? Well, they don't ever tell us who the terrorists are. They just give us ambiguous words. And who's telling us these things? Well, those very same people that we should fear the most. Everyone from our own politicians to the Fabian Socialists, Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Round Table Societies, all of these little wonderful groups and organizations. I will be bringing you discussions directly from their books and their own word of mouth and their plans as they have written them down. And let me tell you, boys and girls, they are batting 1,000 on their plans. Everything that they said they were going to do 150 years ago, they have done. Everything that they said they were going to accomplish over this next 150 years, they have done. Our reaction to these situations that they created were exactly as they said they would be. They have us pegged to a T, so maybe it's time for a new game plan. Maybe it's actually time for us to start understanding who it is, what it is that we are fighting. Maybe it's time to look at them and find out who they are and what they've been doing. So we're going to be bringing more discussions like that starting in April. I'll probably be bringing up another broadcast for that. Another show day. So, yeah, more show days. Woo! As far as more hosts, looking into it, working on it, getting on to it, we'll go from there. I'll keep you guys abreast and informed of when new hosts come on. But, again, as always, you know, hell, just finding a militia unit to come on, I had to run through 10 militia units just to bring one on that actually knew what they were talking about. The other nine had no idea. So you can imagine how much more difficult it is to actually find a host out there to talk about ideas and subjects who isn't going to bring you the latest alien agenda and stories about Obama being a clone of Akhenaten and his wife being a clone of Anaximone or whatever that is. And we're going to bring you Mesa conspiracies and all this other crap. We're going to bring you actual provable facts. So we can then decide how it is we counter this entire globalist, one world order, whatever it is, thing that we're dealing with, or just plain old tyranny in America. So with that being said, everybody, I want to thank you for listening in. For those that actually came on here, congratulations, you actually read the posting. For those who couldn't bring it on here, sorry if the show was too early, or you just didn't read the posting, you thought it was at the normal scheduled time. So, for those that came on, thank you very much. For those that always listen in on a regular basis, again, I appreciate it. Spread the word. Do your duty. Get out there. Get off your couch. Get off your computer. Go do your work outside. Do what needs to be done. And for those of you who can't, that's all you have is the computer because of physical impairments or whatever it is, then you do the best damn work you can online. You do your duty there as well. So, with that being said, everybody be safe, be free. You have a safe week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.